All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for Dave Duo. And if you've ever wondered how someone living in the vibrant Vancouver region makes waves in the real estate investing all the way into Kamloops and the Okanagan, today my guest, Pamela Grabowski, shares some of her strategies and secrets for cross-region investing, essentially out-of-town investing. Pamela, welcome to the show. Delighted to have you here.
Hey, Bryce, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So the number one question whenever people are asking, and I'm sure you get this all the time, is how do you manage properties outside of your market? It's like people want to touch it, people want to be near their rentals especially. What are some strategies right off the top that you can help people kind of maybe break down some barriers and some myths around investing at a distance?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the best place to start is who are you renting to? Who's your client profile? And for us, we knew from the get-go that we wanted to rent to primarily families, specifically blue-collar kind of families, because we understand that that's who we are. We understand them. So that's the type of neighborhood. It narrows it down what kind of neighborhood, what type of asset then you're going to be looking at.
So, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you probably have property management. You're not managing these things from a distance, are you?
In BC, well, Kamloops, yes. Edmonton, no. And then the Okanagan, yeah, we have, because it's more short term. There's an in-house property management.
Okay, so it's like an Airbnb or like a midterm, something like that.
No, we own a few places in a Soyuz in like commercially zoned tourist zone. So actually, with all the new changes to the Airbnb laws in BC, due to regulatory capture, we actually benefit because we are safe.
Interesting. Yeah, there is a lot of, I would say, an attack on short-term rentals. You know, the government always wants their piece. They're like, get licensed or pay us our dues so that you can continue. How are you navigating that? Like, with it being a tourist spot, are you, I guess, exempt, or what's the strategy or the situation there?
Yeah, we're exempt. The buildings were built with the intent to be vacation rentals, and they're zoned commercially. They're zoned exactly for that. So there's no threat for us.
Yeah, you didn't have to go through any sort of strangeness. So obviously, it didn't start, with all these rentals all over, the West Coast here. Where did you get your first start? What was your first entry into the real estate game?
You know, it's almost we're speaking in December 2023, almost 9 years to the day my husband and I took possession of our first home. And I don't subscribe to the idea that your home is an investment. However, we were living in a town we knew we weren't going to live in forever. So, and it had a very obvious ceiling of what that house would ever be worth. So we bought a house that needed a ton of work, and it essentially was like our learning ground to renovate something to a rental quality. That would have a return and like be liquid to be able to actually sell. So that was our first entry into real estate. We bought a BC box in Northern BC and gutted it to the studs essentially and rebuilt it. We had to move back down to the Lower Mainland due to some tragedy in our family. So we sold our house, and when we started renting in the Lower Mainland, we had the proceeds from the sale, which weren't a ton, to be honest. And we were making the decision between we have two young kids, do we buy a principal residence or do we invest it? And the approach we took was, well, if we invest in a market outside of the Lower Mainland, we could cash flow and we could just apply that cash flow to our rent. So it's just a bit of a different perspective that I think a lot of people can do and kind of underestimate.
Because it's less of a liability. I would always say it's like if you want that expensive house in that expensive part of town, if the market tanks, now you own that expensive house in the expensive part of town. But if your rental is paying you, five or six or, maybe even $1,000 a month, if you're in some of these smaller markets where there's cash flow, you can be in those relatively hard to move properties and still have that property under your control as a renter. So I think it's a Grant Cardone thing. He says, own where they want to rent and rent where they want to own to kind of have an actual asset. So how long before you ended up picking up your next one and your next one? And how did you get into that?
So we utilize the burr strategy, which obviously it's if you want to keep going, is the you know it's a great option, right? Recycle your money, keep moving. I think it would have been almost a year between our first like fully completing refinancing, renting our first rental, to figuring out, okay, let's get a like that was pretty awesome. That went according to plan, actually better than according to plan. Now what? Let's repeat this. So it was about a year later we went to the Edmonton market. Having learned what I know now, we were chasing cash flow. In a lot of Western BC investment groups, everybody talks about Edmonton. Yes, there are opportunities, but there are some downsides. Like we can't burr it. We cannot pull more equity out of that home. And who knows when we will be able to? 10 years, maybe? Whereas if
Yeah,
we just
maybe if it
yeah.
gets another boom. I remember there was a boom in like, I'd be guessing maybe it was like 2018 or 2017. They did get a like a an appreciation push. Maybe it was out of town investors from Vancouver pushing the numbers up, but it could happen again. You know, it's all about, it feels like it's an affordability thing, but you are right, that feeling of like, okay, are these things going to go up more than 5% a year for 10 years? Like maybe in 10 years, there's some additional equity other than the pay down that you already put in. So I guess with that being said, have you now shifted your focus into markets where you see futures in appreciation, or what's your strategy today?
Yeah, the strategy today is all about value add again, going back to just really a basic concept. We're still in the Kamloops market looking at doing you can still find a property where you can burr. Like, is it a perfect burr? No, but is it are you getting control and cash flowing from a great asset that is a great thing to have in your portfolio long term? Yeah. And then coupled with that, what we're looking at now and what I'm advising clients I have of mine to do is when you're looking, what's the lot size? That's almost as important as the square footage of the already built structure because of all the legislation changes in BC, being able to go to multiplexes on any single family lot. So I think the path of least resistance for an investor in the short term would be to like, I'm just going to use Kamloops as an example. Buy a house, let's say low fives, put a suite in it, have it stabilized. Then, when the legislation's enacted in June, laneway. Now you have a triplex, you're steady cash flow in desirable areas.
Yeah, and that's interesting too, because it's happening all over the country where they're pushing for density. You know, they're saying, okay, you can build a fourplex on anything in town now, or in Ontario, you can build a sixplex on anything pretty much anywhere as long as you can like fit it. So that is interesting, because in BC especially, like if you look at markets like Kelowna, for instance, Kelowna 10 years ago, yeah, great market, you know, lots of stuff going on. You go there now though, and there's a lot of new things that have popped up in the last 10 years. And if you're, you know, grab that piece of land, even if you don't go and put the laneway thing in, how many years before someone with like a bigger appetite for development comes along and just says, oh, I'll take this thing because it's next to my other thing and I want to do something even bigger. So it especially in BC, it seems to be emerging. Now, we talked before the show, you've recently gotten your license, and that's allowing you to help even more investors because now you're on both sides of the fence and you're also trained in the investment side. A lot of realtors will show you houses, but when it comes down to like the numbers and like, is this a good investment? How are you helping your clients kind of navigate that?
Yeah. A big part of it is, and it's not the, might not be the greatest sales pitch, is I always ask people why. Like, why are you investing? Like, what are you after before I can help you? Like, what are we trying to accomplish here in a reasonable timeline? So that's been very helpful. I also, the other thing, there's so many tools out there that people can get such a good base knowledge. And I think there's so many free tools out there that put you ahead of what I know some realtor, like, when we were first getting started, some agents that we work with, they never told us about how, like the software out there to analyze a deal. Like, they always told you about one way to analyze your return. Oh, hey, this is going to go up in value. But that's only one of the ways that you build a return in real estate. So people just don't know what they don't know, and no one's born knowing how to analyze a real estate deal. So just equipping people with the tools, and then going from there.
So have you found with being a real estate agent now, has it helped you? Because a lot of people, when they're investors, they're like, I'm already like neck deep in real estate all the time. I should get my license. That's the thing, is like, I should get my license. What would you say to someone who's thinking about it as an investor and is thinking the same thing?
It'd be different for everybody. I know for me, I felt the entrepreneurial spirit in me was dying at my government job. So that was part of it. The other part is having, especially when we're in the mania of the market, having access to information like now. That was really what I was looking for. But there are downsides. Like it's slowing down as prices become more and more unaffordable for the average Canadian. Sales will continue to be low because there's just less people who can afford it. The great thing about having cash flow supporting your life is you can make decisions to, hey, I'm going to try a new profession. So that has been, I'm grateful to be in a position like that. I wouldn't say it's all roses. And I would say if you align yourself with someone you can work with, you don't need to go all in on the profession. You just need to find the right professional to work with.
Yeah, like the right team or the right brokerage that, because you don't have to be a full-time real estate agent. A lot of people I find out after I deal with them as an investor, they're like, oh, and I also am a realtor. And it's like, cool, that's awesome. I bet you have instant access to all the numbers that I need. So I've always thought about it, but at the same time, the more hats you wear, the heavier they get. So I'm just going to keep my hands out of being an agent for now. But what does the future look like for your investing strategy over, let's say, the next 12 or 24 months? People are looking at the market and deciding what to do. What is your strategy?
I would get again, it's the largest laneway or runway for returns I see is the increased value with the infill. So right now I'm working with investors that are looking at infill within the Vancouver region as well as outside. The other thing, the appetite for development, even small scale, in lots of little desirable towns across BC, the cities are welcoming it now. So if you can find a deal, maybe be creative. It's the value add, it's the units adding to the stock of the housing supply that's where I'm focused. One of the things I've been looking at for the next 12 to 24 months is doing a small development in the Kootenays. And I don't know if you're familiar with Nelson. It's a pretty rad little surf town, very eclectic, great place to live. You can still get lots for just under 200, and the city's will roll out a red carpet. So something I've been looking at is what can I do with like a duplex prefab, because finding access to good trades there is a challenge. So if I can shorten that timeline with prefabrication, that's what I plan to do in the next year and a half.
Yeah, and that seems to be an emerging trend, because let's say that everywhere in Canada and likely in the United States as well, they're having a housing shortage in a different way. Maybe it's not as bad there, but it's certainly a challenge here in Canada. And then there's only so many builders to go around. And at some point, it's going to max out. So we are going to have to start looking at creative ways to get these units put in with prefab. What are you finding out there so far in your search for some sort of prefabricated construction to ease the infill problem that we have out here?
Well, I'm gonna mess it up. I always get it wrong. R277, I believe that's the CSA. Once it's affixed to the land, it's the bank looks at it exactly as if it was built on site. What I'm finding is, like, when you think about timeline, so if you're using private money, which is expensive, you can speed up that timeline until you can refinance into a conventional loan. One of the biggest things is that you don't have any inspections. You're not waiting for the electrical inspection, the plumbing inspection, because that's all done at one location and it's certified that it was all done to a standard. So it's literally plug and play. So that I could, if I had water hooked up, I could have a dwelling in 4 months, a home for a family in 4 months. I cannot, there's no way I could do that with conventional building standards.
Yeah, and I really think that is the, I have a feeling that that is the future of a lot of the development. Now, granted, you're going to have to do like particular sites are going to need particular buildings, but when we look at, say, land in Nelson or land in, in areas that aren't maybe a metro, you might be able to get a little bit more creative with what exactly you're building. And yeah, definitely you can go from like nothing to occupancy in probably 4 months if you get it, if you can get that pre-construction building put together somewhere and brought to the site. So, obviously there's capital involved in those types of projects. How do you plan on financing that, being that it's a little bit outside of the box?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think it's a with it being a little outside of the box, there is a bit of hesitancy, and as well as it because I just mentioned Nelson as just an example. I would say people in Western Canada are familiar with that market. Someone from Toronto or has no idea. So it's familiarity with the desire how desirable that market actually is to live. To be honest, it's been a warmer response than I anticipated. Luckily for us, we do have a portfolio that has equity built up, so we've considered, a short-term second mortgage, raising it privately because of the fast turnaround. That it's not like having, a private loan at 15% for 18 months. If you're looking at it for 6 months, that's doable. As well as partners. Specifically, have when I've mentioned this, people, hey, I'm not interested. But I know someone in that region that does excavation. They do, they can hook up your power and stuff like that. So again, being creative, like, okay, instead of a dollar amount, why don't we partner with like for services?
So, with all the stuff you've done in real estate so far and, the future that you're looking at, Robert Kiyosaki calls this the unfair advantage. What's something that comes easy to you that other people might find difficult to do?
Seeing the big picture, like the short term, I don't even think that's a fair advantage, but just being able to see, I'm very clear about where we're going and the life I want to live. And so short term challenges such as interest rates, such as market mania, like, okay, whatever, just fade that. Just keep your eye on the long prize. Like this, 18 months we've had elevated interest rates. It's a short-term thing. And then if you bought for cash flow, it's risk mitigation. You can sustain this.
Well, hopefully they can, and in some cases, I mean, there's always an answer. I can remember, and it's interesting what you said is like it's a short-term problem, because I can remember challenges in Ontario in like 2016 and challenges in Manitoba in like 2017, and the stress test comes in and it shakes things up and then it fades off and you almost forget about it after a while and you just keep doing real estate because like there's always going to be market fluctuations. It's like how determined are you to actually execute the plan that you have going. So with the real estate that you're looking at, are you a find the deal and then the money sort of person, or do you prefer to have your capital lined up and then go looking for the next deal?
Well, I think they go hand in hand. Do you have those relationships? Are you sharing ideas? Whether you're not looking for the money or not, like you're just sharing what you're learning and seeing with, your friends, family, just your network. I think I do. So in that respect, I think it's probably I find the money first, or I find the relationship first. And if you start from there, when you find a deal, you know that it fits for that person. Yeah. And it's funny. You said, what's your unfair advantage? I'm just going to see, my husband's going to kill me that I'm backtracking now. But I would say my unfair advantage to what I see, like that I'll compare to a lot of solopreneurs is that I do have a partner that is all in on this. We are in alignment and we both are very much have the same investment thesis and willing to roll up our sleeves. So more and more, I'm starting to see that as like such an advantage, because I just assume everybody, if they're in a partnership, is on the same board. And that is a
That's
challenge to
nice.
stay on the same page, but it's
Yeah.
also where the magic happens.
Well, you get, I'm sure, you know, the longer you become a realtor, the more you're going to find out that people are not always on the same page about real estate. You know, one wants to buy, one doesn't want to buy, one wants to invest, the other one thinks it's a ridiculous idea. So, yeah, certainly that can be an unfair advantage because not everyone has that support to like actively pursue things. You know, instead of getting the, oh, we're buying another house, eh? Well, what about the last one or whatever it is? So, yeah, definitely that can be an unfair advantage. And not many people say both when it comes to deal and the money and money in the deal. But I like what you said is like matching the investor to the deal, finding out what investors are looking for and kind of working it backwards because there's tons of deals. Deals are everywhere. But the capital, if you don't match it properly, can be more trouble than it can sometimes be worth. So when you're presenting deals to investors, what are some tips that you can give to people who are maybe just starting to present deals that you've found success with?
Well, you come from, again, I said when I work with clients as well, is like, what is that person's goal? Understand who you're working with. Know your KYP, know your personnel. Is this person looking for like an income, so therefore like a private lend would be a better deal? Or is this person looking to build wealth, therefore a joint venture, a BRRRR type project would be better for them? So it's all about, yeah, start with values, start with what are those other people's goals, and like you said, matching the investor to the deal. And recognize that there are different times in life where I wanted to do something very active, wanted to be all in, like the active partner. But I'm also a passive partner on just as many deals, because there are times where I don't have the capacity. There are also times where you have different tools for different investment opportunities. TFSAs, RSPs in Canada. When I left my government job, I left with what's called a LIRA, which not as many people are familiar with, a locked-in retirement account. So I was given the option to leave it with the pension fund. And when I was 65, I'd get paid $100 a month till the day I died. Or I could put it in a self-directed fund. And now that's my like bucket of money that I private lend. But I look for private lending deals for that money, because there's no option to ever take it out until I'm 65. Well, I'm not looking for like a monthly private lending percentage. Like, I'm looking for equity, because it has such a longer time horizon.
Yeah, $100 at age 65 might be 10 bucks comparatively in its purchasing power. So, yeah, that's the other thing. You know, a lot of people don't know that they can actually invest some of these different funds that they're, you know, maybe getting 4 or 5% through maybe a mutual fund investing or stuff like that, that they can actually direct invest different types of funds to real estate investors and actually get a pretty decent return without actually doing the hard work of doing the deal. They can just be, you know, passive partners and invest with investors with the money that they have. They don't always have to, you know, the bank's not the only place that you can use those funds. So if you're interested in investing in real estate, you know, definitely check out the different ways that you can invest the savings that you already have. So,
For
you know,
sure.
is it,
I would just
go
like to
ahead.
add on that. I find everyone, like, there's this private lending out there, but I put them as different, like the right tool for the right job. Lots of people have HELOCs. So if you're have a home equity line of credit, if you pull the money out of that, okay, right now you have a 7.2% on average interest payment. So you're gonna have to look for a private lending deal that has a monthly payment. Whereas if you have a TFSA, say you got 100 grand, 50 grand in your TFSA, and you private lend that, you don't really care to get a monthly payment. If at the end it's like a big juicy return of 30 plus percent, that's better than the 15% you might have gotten monthly, because you'll never get taxed on it again if it's in your TFSA.
Yeah, it's like saved money versus debt money. Like going and getting a HELOC out, it better be competitive enough to capture the interest. And then if you have like RRSPs and stuff like that, that it's just kind of I wouldn't say sitting there because it's making money, but it can be self-directed, and a lot of people aren't aware that they can access those funds that maybe their job is matching. There's a lot of RSP matching and things like that where people are like, well, it's just locked in, it's going to be there. So, as a new real estate agent and an investor, undoubtedly people are going to listen to this episode. They're going to say, how do I connect with this person? What should I do? Where can they find you?
Yeah, the best place to get a hold of me is on Instagram or Facebook. I'm just under my full name. That's my handle, Pamela Grabowski. Happy to answer any questions anyone has about the BC market, how to get going. I'm on a mission to help 1,000 people with their first investment. That's kind of what's driving me.
Oh, that's a great mission. Community service is a huge part of giving back in real estate, so that's very admirable. Well, I really appreciate the time and the perspective. You have definitely some interesting stuff on the whole investing out of town. People in Vancouver are very much like, oh, we can buy something in Edmonton. Yes, and you may not be able to get any sort of like lift out of some of these markets. So really, as you said time and time again, find out why you are investing. If you know why, you'll be able to find the right investment. So I really appreciate your insight, Pamela.
Thanks, Bryce. Thanks so much for having me here today. And I just got to say, what you and Dave do in interviewing a lot of first time or not, sorry, a lot of first time probably interviewees on a podcast. I think it's rad because it gives a voice to a lot of people out there doing different things that aren't
Oh, yeah.
the same circle of the usual suspects on stages and on podcasts. So thanks so much for what you guys do.
Yeah, no problem. Someone's gotta do it. And that's us. We're the team.
Right on.
Yeah, I really appreciate your time. And until next time, guys, we'll catch you on the next episode.